Welcome to Blog Talk Radio in high fidelity.
You are listening live to In Much Less Detail, the podcast, where we cut through the noise and give you your NFL breakdown in much less detail. Here is you live on a Saturday night, October 22nd, 2016, a historic Saturday night, at least for Cub fans out there. It's what it seems to be. I'm Dre, he's Jay, the world's biggest Cub fan, and we are keeping one eye on the Cubbies, trying to clinch out the National League pennant against the Dodgers, currently leading 5-0 in the sixth. Sorry for any spoilers. Actually, not sorry. If you're not keeping up with it, then that's your fault. And this is going to be a little struggle of a show, not just because we're distracted watching the Cubs, but because we're both actually battling illness. The show was scheduled to be live last night. Jason came down sick, but even before I knew that Jason had started to be feeling sick, I was myself in the ER. Thanks to a nasty little bout of food poisoning. Folks, do not get the all-you-can-eat shrimp from Red Lobster. Don't do it. At least not the one on Highway 64 out here in Memphis, Tennessee. I can't speak for all the others, but I'm pretty sure, and I'm not 100% that was what did it. There's other food I've eaten, obviously, in the last few days, but the fact is, Thursday night I had that, and yesterday I was throwing up blood, so you do the math. Anyway, Jason, we start off week 7, Thursday night, with the Green Bay Packers doing what anyone should do to the Chicago Bears, which is just wait them out, and then exploit their secondary because it's always been crap. And that's what Aaron Rodgers has done. But still, Aaron Rodgers and the Packers did not look like world beaters. There's still plenty of things to be concerned about if you're a Packers fan.
No, that was not an impressive win at all. Not even close to being an impressive win for the Packers. That should have been an absolute drubbing, and it ended up being, I mean, that was a cover until the fourth quarter. I mean, I felt pretty good about my Bears. I didn't feel good about the fact that it was Matt Barkley trying to lead the comeback after Brian Hoyer got destroyed. So, yeah, oh well, one of those picks, what can you do? I have a feeling if Hoyer managed to stay in the game, maybe they could have made a little bit more gains, could have kept that a little bit closer. But, yeah, even in a win, the Packers didn't do enough to impress me. And it's a 16-point win. I mean, we're going to talk about a team that looks unimpressive in a 16-point win. And talk about being a little worried. Aaron Rodgers had to throw 56 times in that game. And they still only managed to score 26 points against that woeful Bears defense.
Yeah, it was not very pretty at all. It was very compelling to watch what they were trying to do with the running game. They're mixing in wide receivers and running backs that they just traded for 70 hours ago or what have you. Just trying to sort of piece everything together. I don't think it bodes very well for the Packers in the near future. But again, this is why I picked them to beat the Bears and cover the number. You don't need to piece together that much to beat the Bears. And Brian Hoyer going down with the broken arm, it's kind of weird to think that Brian Hoyer was the key to the Bears contending in that game and putting up some points. But you can't deny the numbers that Hoyer was the first quarterback for the Bears to put up four straight 300-yard games in forever. And there was something happening there. I don't know what. But once he went down and Matt Barkley came in and Barkley proved that he's not ready for prime time or any other time. And that certainly helped lead the Packers on their way to covering. But yeah, it was strange. It was just a strange game all around. And the end result definitely did not represent what actually happened out there.
No. And, you know, I started last week giving you a game and it turned out okay for me. So I'm not too worried.
Well, there you go. So we will move on off of that, and I will let you all know that you're listening live to the only place you can listen live, the stream on the website, blogtalkradio.com/InMuchLessDetail. There's plenty of places to listen to the podcast after we go off the air, this live show, this one-hour live show, and whatever after show we might do. You can subscribe on iTunes. You can subscribe on the TuneIn app. You can subscribe on MixCloud, Player.fm, Blubbery, or any other podcast app that you may have that we may or may not be on, but those are the ones I know that we're definitely on, as well as subscribebyemail.com. As far as contacting us, I'm on Twitter at IMLDDre. Jason is on Twitter at IMLDJTG. Always email us. Send that to inmuchlessdetail@gmail.com. And all our picks for this week will be up on the blog, where all of our picks are always listed forever for anyone to go back and see or criticize. But we're both flying over 500 so far this year, so not much to criticize. Our blog site is inmuchlessdetail.blogspot.com. And you should expect those picks up on the blog, I'd say approximately an hour or so after this live show goes off the air. So with that, it's on to the rest of Week 7 in the NFL. Only three highlight games this week, and that's a very simple explanation for that. Patriots-Steelers would be a highlight game if Ben Roethlisberger were playing. He's not, therefore it's not. And all the other games suck. So we're not going to use any of them as highlight games. We'll just use three. We'll start with the only undefeated team left in football, the Minnesota Vikings at 5-0, 2-0 on the road, coming off their bye. Should be nice and fresh for the Philadelphia Eagles, who were the talk of the league and the toast of the NFL with their rookie quarterback Carson Wentz when they went off to their 3-0 start, but they've lost their last two since then. Still 2-0 at home, however, so should be a fun matchup in the city of brotherly love. The Vikings are 3-point road favorites, as they should be. The undefeated Vikings favored by 3 at Philadelphia. Jason, who you got?
Yeah, I'm going to have to go with the Vikings here. I'm going to go ahead and call this the welcome to the NFL Carson Wentz game, because he hasn't seen a defense like this yet. So we're going to get a real interesting view on Carson Wentz and what he's all about when he has to face this stifling defense. You know, and there has been a little bit of, I won't call it regression, but we'll say that they're coming back to the pack a little bit. The Eagles started off, you know, like a bat out of hell. Everybody was all on board with Carson Wentz. And then even in that first defeat to, I believe it was Detroit, he wasn't the reason why they lost. But this Vikings team is a whole different animal. I mean, they score every possible way that you can, defense, offense, special teams. Sam Bradford has been good enough. You know, he's played well.
I heard the pain in your voice as you tried to spit that out.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it's Sam Bradford. This was always your least favorite guy. You were like the Sam Bradford hater of all haters. I mean, you totally hated Sam Bradford.
Correct.
So just knowing what he's been able to do, you know, with that change of scenery, and then to lose Adrian Peterson and still kind of keep it going and game manage that team to an undefeated record. I know Sean Hill got the first win, but he's done an excellent job in his work with the Vikings. Basically, don't let the offense screw up. Let the defense dominate. And you know, then we'll just throw in some, you know, punt returns and kickoff returns. We're just going to throw this whole thing into the mix. So this is a, I hate to say it, like an unstoppable train right now, but against a rookie quarterback, I have a feeling that Vikings defense is going to have something up its sleeve for Carson Wentz.
And more props to the Vikings coaching staff for coaching Sam Bradford, coaching that tendency to do too much out of him so far, and making sure that he doesn't try to throw the Vikings into victory. They're still doing this. I've mentioned this every time the Vikings play, and I'm going to continue to because I'm still amazed by it. They're doing this with such unbalance in their offense right now. They're not getting anything out of the running game since Adrian Peterson got hurt, and before he got hurt, he wasn't very impressive his first game of the season before that. They're dead last. They're DFL in running. in the league in yards per game. And they're still undefeated, and they're still getting production out of the passing game, even though right now you don't have to worry about the run game. You just you could key in on Sam Bradford and make him make mistakes, but so far he hasn't made them. So the question would be, do the Eagles have the defense to force that out of Sam Bradford? Can the Eagles shut down the run enough to key in on Sam Bradford and make him have to win the game through the air? And unfortunately for the Eagles, the answer is no. They're not very good stopping a run this year. They're giving up 4.8 yards per carry. So if Matt Asiata and Jerick McKinnon and the Vikings want to make some hay, this might be the game to do it. And they need it. They need to balance that offense, despite the fact they're the only perfect team. They're not a perfect team in that respect. They really need that. The Eagles are playing this Vitae guy again at right tackle. The Halui Hui Pui, whatever his first name is, Vitae, my name of the year candidate, after he got absolutely destroyed by Ryan Kerrigan last week, they're sending him out there again against the Vikings defense coming off a bye. Yeah, I got the Vikings. There's no doubt about this. Almost considered in my lock. The Eagles are certainly not what we thought they were the first 3 weeks. We thought Carson Wentz was going to be this unflappable quarterback that was just going to lead the Eagles to the promised land. And he's not that bad. He's not bad, really, but he's not nearly as good as he looked those first 3 weeks. So, indeed, a coming back to the pack for the Eagles and what should be a continued dominance for the Vikings, especially defensively, especially coming off a bye, especially playing what appears to be possibly one of the worst offensive tackles in the history of football.
Yeah, and this is getting to that point for the Eagles here. I hate to say it, but they start to run the risk of falling behind a little bit in that division. And I you know, it's to be expected with a rookie quarterback, and he's going to have his moments, and he's also going to have those, oh, he's a rookie quarterback moments. I think we're going to see more of that in this game than we're going to see of them. How do you game plan this Vikings team? I mean, they cover, they get after the quarterback. I mean, they're just extremely talented. I mean, they really do have that number one defense in the league right now. Whether it's statistically proven or not, they're the best one out there.
Yeah, the Eagles will have what they can possibly muster. Excuse me. You were talking about a cough slipping through on your end. There's me having a cough slip through. Yeah, they'll have Ryan Matthews out there to try to make some hay on the ground and try to balance their offense. They have a better shot at balancing their offense maybe than the Vikings do, but in the end, the Vikings have made the plays. They have been there making whatever play they need to make when the chips are down, and I'm thinking that's what the Vikings are going to do again tomorrow. Our second of three highlight games this week, we will do the primetime games. They've got some intrigue. And I saw a little bit about this online, that finally there's some actual intriguing games on primetime for the NFL, because the games so far this year, due to injury and bad scheduling, what have you, have really sucked, like really bad. But finally we get a couple of games this week that are actually going to be compelling, and people actually will want to watch them. Of course, Sunday Night Football brings us the game. The game from last year was the Seattle Seahawks and the Arizona Cardinals. They had an absolute gangbusters game last year. It was the game of the year, no doubt about it. And they will renew their rivalry, their division rivalry, on Sunday night. Seattle comes in at 4-1. Arizona comes in at 3-3. The Cardinals have been wobbling and looking like they really need to steady themselves, but they do come in off a big victory over the Jets this past Monday night. So two straight night games for the Cardinals. Seattle is a underdog, only 1 point. Seattle plus one at Arizona for this one. So obviously people thinking this is a very, very even matchup. For this one, I simply would have to consult the numbers as far as the last couple of times Seattle has gone into Arizona. Whatever problems the Seahawks are having, they get up when they go to Arizona. They absolutely put it together and get hyped up. Week 17 of last season, Seattle 36, Arizona 6. This is going to sound familiar. Week 16 of the 2014 season, when Seattle went to Arizona, the final score of that, Seattle 35, Arizona 6. I'm not picking Seattle to win this game 37-6, although that would be the progression if you go just by the numbers. I am going to pick Seattle to win the game. I think it's going to be close. I think it's going to be hard fought. But I think Seattle is in a little better position than Arizona right now. The Cardinals are not going to have one of their receivers, John Brown, maybe their fastest receiver, will miss this game. Seattle will not have their hard-hitting safety, Cam Chancellor. So there's a couple of pieces there missing, key pieces, but not really that big a deal. The main guys are going to be there. Carson Palmer is recovered from his concussion. He's going to be there. Russell Wilson appears to be recovered from his ankle woes. He may not be back to 100% yet as far as running around and being as much of a threat scrambling as he is throwing the ball. But just throwing the ball so far this year, he's been a hell of a threat. The Seahawks are really getting it done through the air, and they're struggling almost as bad as the Vikings are on the ground so far this year. So they're going to need Russell Wilson to have another big game through the air. The Seahawks are not going to get off the schneid running the ball facing Arizona's defense. That's just not going to happen. But if it comes down to Russell Wilson winning a game with his arm, despite Arizona being great defending the pass, I think he's going to do it. I think he's grown as a quarterback a little bit every year, and I think it continues this year with him having to sort of learn how to win games with his arm because he hadn't had his mobility because of the ankle injuries early on in the year. So I think he's sort of developing into more, even more of an arm threat, and I think that's going to help Seattle overcome the Cardinals and get a big victory in Arizona for the third year in a row.
Yeah, I'm just sort of looking at what I've been, you know, seeing so far. In Arizona, they just haven't looked right. You know, Carson Palmer's kind of he had the concussion, but he's sort of resorted back to his interception Santa kind of ways. He's had a few games where he hasn't been very sharp. You know, I've been calling out David Johnson for being just an absolute beast. And, you know, they're going to need a massive, massive effort from him if they're going to even compete in this game, because Seattle, to be 4-1, as shaky as they looked, is pretty much, it's a testament to how talented that team is, because Seattle did not look very good in those first few games, but they managed in typical Seattle fashion to eke out some wins. They just had the one against the Falcons where, of course, you know, Julio Jones decides to suddenly drop a ball. And then, you know, Richard Sherman gets away with pulling them down to the ground on the last play of the game. You only get that non-call in Seattle, by the way. That was in Atlanta. Total difference. But, you know, weird things happen when you're playing up there in Seattle. So there's always been sort of this magic with that team. But, yeah, you're right. They love going to Arizona. So I'm definitely going to be on board with this pick as well with you. It's 2-for-2 so far on these highlight games. We're going to agree with each other. But Seattle has definitely sort of weathered Russell Wilson's injury and let him kind of play through it. And yeah, here they are, 4-1, going up against a just not as impressive Arizona team as they had been the last couple of seasons. You know, missing Brown, missing the deep threats, not going to help them. And then something, you know, Carson Palmer, like I said, he's reverting back to his tendencies to throw some interceptions and some ugly ones too. And that doesn't bode well for them. They need him to be clean, and Seattle's not the kind of defense that you can be generous with.
Yeah, but it still should be a great atmosphere and another fun game between those two teams. It's the feud right now that I think we both agree that we look forward to the most in the NFL, sort of taking the place of what the Steelers and Ravens used to be. Should be just blood on the field and slobber knocker football and what we really like about the NFL.
Yeah, no, this was always an awesome matchup, but I don't see this one being as amazing of a game as we've normally been given by these two. Like you pointed out, we've always talked about that Seattle-Arizona game last year just being it might be one of the best regular season football games I've ever seen, just as far as the drama and the fun and the way it bounced back and forth and just the momentum swings. Don't think it's going to be as enjoyable Sunday night as what we got last year.
On to our third highlight game going to Monday Night Football, the Houston Texans and the Denver Broncos. And this obviously is a highlight because of the fact of Brock Osweiler getting all that cash money from the Houston Texans. It's all about the money. And returning with his fat pocketbook to Denver, the scene of where he made all that money with his awesome, stellar quarterback play from last year. And by awesome and stellar, of course, I mean benched for Peyton Manning before the Super Bowl, before the playoffs began, actually. But he still got the money, and you don't turn down the money, so can't blame him for that. And in any event, Houston at 4-2, but 0-2 on the road so far this year. And, of course, without their all-world defensive player, J.J. Watt, for the rest of the year. And Denver still possessing that defense that they possess, 4-2 as well this year, 2-1 at home. The Broncos are 7.5-point favorites. Houston gets 7.5 at Denver. Jason, what's your pick?
You know, and that's a pretty big line. I was surprised because I've been doing this blind for the last 4 weeks. I have not been knowing going into the week what any of the lines are. And I'm a little surprised by how big that line is, but I still don't think it's big enough. I'll be shocked if Houston scores in this game, honestly. Brock Osweiler, you know, like you said, they're 0-2 on the road, but neither one of us are overly enamored with Brock Osweiler, the great Brock Osweiler. He basically played one really good quarter of football against the Colts. Okay, good job. Good job, Brock. You just earned all that money against an absolute sieve of a defense. You're not going to get that this week in Denver. Against, if there's a team that knows you, it's the team that you practiced against last year. They know all his tendencies. They know what's going to be going on with Brock Osweiler. I have a feeling they're going to get after him pretty good. Not quite my lock of the week, but yeah, Denver. I basically said Houston's going to get shut out, and I still don't have this as my lock of the week. So yeah, 7.5 to me seems like a big number. I like what Denver's been doing. You know, Trevor Siemian has played respectable football. I mean, they've really only check it here. All right. Yeah, you know, 4-2. It's not too bad considering, you know, you basically have a guy that's totally unproven going out there and just kind of hanging the hat on the defense so far. So I'm going to go with Denver squish in this game.
Yeah, I totally concur. Not much else to discuss there because you covered it for me. Even if the Broncos don't know Brock Osweiler, still the number one pass defense in football. If they don't know Brock Osweiler, they can still stop Brock Osweiler because he's Brock Osweiler. Yeah, they're going to beat the hell out of him. They even said so in the interviews leading up to this game during the week. They said, we don't have any ill will towards him, but we still want to beat the hell out of him. So I think he kind of knows what he's in for when he comes in. He's going to get it from the crowd. He's going to get it from the players. He's going to get it all around. And even though Will Fuller returns for Houston, I don't think he's going to have time to find Will Fuller or New Hopkins or anybody else. I think the Broncos are going to come at him so furiously that he's not going to even have time in the pocket to do anything with his deep threats. So it's not going to really matter much. Denver, I just wanted to point this one out from Pro Football Focus because it struck me as interesting. They pointed out that Emmanuel Sanders has 36 catches this year and no drops. And it strikes me as interesting because I just contrasted in my mind to the guy on the other side of the field from him, Demaryius Thomas, who he should really take note of that. You know, that's great that you got a guy with over 30 catches and no drops, because that sort of counterbalances the other guy who likes to drop the ball a lot. So I don't know if there's dropping the ball lessons that Demaryius needs to take from Emmanuel Sanders, but he'd be well advised to take them if Emmanuel's offering them. But yeah, I, I agree with you. I think Houston might not score any points in this game, and I think the Broncos defense is taking this one. It'd be hard to not take it personally. The guy who won a ring with your team and decided to leave in the offseason, like, who the fuck are we? What do you think we are? Some guys have to be taking that personally on the Broncos side, and even the ones that aren't still have to sort of look at it as, okay, whatever happens, we can't let this guy beat us. We cannot let this guy come in and win this game. So I think the Broncos are going to turn in a very spirited effort and hold down the Texans big time in Denver. All right.
Yeah,
moving on to the –
We were really stretching this week for highlight games. they're both at least winning teams, but one of them clearly more legitimate than the other.
Clearly, at least we both think so anyway. All right, the rest of week 7 in the NFL in even more less detail. These London games are always weird just because they're in London. This one weird for a couple of other reasons. Start tomorrow morning at 9:30 Eastern time overseas in Europe with the Giants and the Rams. Strange because of it's you're taking a game that features the New York market versus the LA market, and you're taking them out of I guess LA would be the home team, so you're taking it out of LA. So it's strange on that level that you're taking these two big huge markets and putting their game in another continent. It's strange because, hey, thanks, Los Angeles. We love you. Thank you for supporting us. Even when you didn't have a team, we're going to bring a team back to you. We're taking them out of St. Louis to get them back to you. Now, fuck you. We're taking one of your home dates and bringing it over to England. Strange on that respect. Strange on top of all of that, because for the first time, this is going to be one of those England games that's not played at Wembley Stadium. All of these other England games have been played at Wembley Stadium. For some reason, they decided to go to Twickenham Stadium, some rugby stadium. I don't know what the fuck that's all about. But, yeah, it's going to be in England. It's not even going to be at Wembley Stadium. Giants-Rams, Giants 3-3, Rams 3-3. Giants are 2.5-point favorites versus the Rams in London at Twickenham.
Well, I think, you know, we finally started to see Odell Beckham get off a little bit, finally, after all of his early season frustration. And since this is Jeff Fisher coaching against a non-NFC West opponent, I have to take the Giants here.
Yeah, we're 4-for-4, so this might be one of those weeks. Yeah, I concur. The Rams don't offer anything to me that would make me want to take them, especially what their defensive line has done in the last few weeks with all their injuries. They've been getting pushed around easily. So thinking about Eli Manning not having much time, that usually is something that makes you pause, but he should have all the time that he wants because the Rams haven't been able to pressure anybody. Although Robert Quinn is set to return this week, so that might change things. By the way, I guess a tape of Josh Brown doing something to his wife has to come out before he actually gets cut. Because everything that came out this week, why the fuck is he still on the Giants? Why is he still in the NFL? I thought this was established that psychopaths like this that make a living out of terrorizing their wives or terrorizing girlfriends don't even have a chance in the league, but I guess not. I guess you can do anything you want as long as you're a mere place kicker. I don't know. But anyway.
That whole situation is weird.
Yeah, it really is. So the games on the continent on Sunday, starting at 1:00 Eastern, New Orleans and Kansas City. New Orleans at 2-3, Kansas City at 3-2. Chiefs are 6-point favorites at home against the Saints.
Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to take those 6 points here. The Saints can move the ball. That clearly isn't a problem. And if the Saints are able to find some early success in this game moving the football, we know how much you love Alex Smith trying to either win a shootout or win in a comeback. So New Orleans' problems are all defensive, which means that we could end up in a shootout, but I can see the Saints staying within the number here. So I'm going to take the points.
Well, that's what I had to wonder about thinking about this game and breaking it down. Will Andy Reid resist the urge to open up the offense? Because Alex Smith is not the quarterback you want to really open up an offense with, but you're playing the Saints defense, so you almost have to, I think. So I'm going to take the Chiefs and give the six. I don't feel great about it, but for the love of God, it's the Saints defense. You have to open it up. You have to, I would think. It's not that the Saints cornerbacks are any great shakes, but Delvin Bro and Sterling Moore, they're probably the best of what they have. They're both out for this game. It seriously, open up the offense. If Jerry Maclin has less than 100 yards receiving, that's an absolute crime. But I think Andy Reid will get it together and figure that out. The Brownies and the Bengals, 0-6 Cleveland, the woebegone Cleveland Browns in the Battle of Ohio, 10.5-point underdogs, biggest spread of the week at the 2-4 and sort of hapless themselves Cincinnati Bengals. I'm guessing Jason's on a coughing jack with his mute button there.
No, I was talking, but I forgot to hit the button.
Oh.
So, no, you got to love Cincinnati because they figure out ways to lose games, but they compete. They hang around. So, as long as...
So, you mean you got to love Cleveland?
Yeah, as long as Cleveland just keeps hanging around, you know, and playing hard, and Cincinnati has not been very impressive. So, this is not the Bengals team that I picked to go to the Super Bowl. Oh, my God. I'll take Cleveland and all those points. Absolutely.
They have been hanging around, that's for sure. But how many players can you keep losing before you stop hanging around? Terrell Pryor has a hamstring now. There's a decent chance he doesn't play in this game. What the hell did the Browns do without Terrell Pryor? They have, like, nothing left after that, I would think. I'm going to take Cincinnati. I'm going to give the 10.5, and I'm going to make it my lock of the week, probably because I think the Bengals need a game like this to sort of turn everything around and get their season going back the way it's supposed to. And the poor woebegone Brownies, as beat up as they are, should provide the opportunity to do that. However, if they are still tight towards the end of that game, now everything comes down to what will Vontaze Burfict do if Cincinnati is losing this game late or if it's a close one. He's as unstable as any domestic abuser in the NFL, so they might want to keep an eye on him. If they're losing to the Browns, he might, like, take out a weapon and start cutting people on the field or something. So hopefully that doesn't happen. But I will take the Bengals and make it my lock of the week. The Oakland Raiders at 4-2. There's a few lines when you look at the record. First of all, there's five lines this week that are 1 or 1.5. So that's very tight right off the bat. But there's a few lines where the team with the worst record is the underdog simply because they're on the road. And some of them really make, like, no sense. So we'll see if you think this is one of those. But Oakland is 4-2 with Riverboat Jack Del Rio, yet they're 1.5-point underdogs at the 2-3 Jacksonville Jaguars.
Yeah, and that's seeing not very much so far out of the Jacksonville team. I remember the question being posed to us by our football fan rush radio counterparts about the Jaguars. Did anybody think that the Jaguars are going to compete? Are they going to contend? Are they going to make the playoffs? And I remember just outright, like, laughing at the very of that. No, the Jaguars are they'll compete, but, you know, I basically have said that they are last year's Oakland Raiders, whereas Oakland Raiders this year are this year's Oakland Raiders, and that's a better team than Jacksonville. So, and Oakland's been playing really good on the road. They've won some games in dramatic fashion on the road, but being able to do that means that you have the confidence going into a game that you can do it. So I'm going to take Oakland and the points, I guess, in this one.
The 1.5. Oakland 3-0 on the road this year. Jacksonville, the only two wins they've had have been at home. Well, if you count that home win on the road in England, I guess. Anyway, It's one of the curious lines on the board, but I'll tell you what, here comes the terrible, awful, not very good Oakland Raiders defense. And we talked a little bit about this on the last show, on the recap show, that you think of all the defenses that have just been getting their doors blown off this year. When you think about the Jets and Darrelle Revis and the Saints always getting destroyed, Oakland's worse than all of them. And that's impressive, because that's really hard to do. I'm taking the Jaguars. They're getting this terrible defense come in, and it's at the perfect time. They need a terrible defense to come in so that they can do something, because they haven't been doing much of anything this year. So I'm going to take the Jags in that one. The Baltimore Ravens at 3-3. This was interesting because Joe Flacco had been rumored to maybe not be making it onto the field this week, but it looks like he's going to go. It was looking for a second like Ryan Mallett might be suiting up and going for the Ravens, which would probably change a lot of people's picks. But instead, it's going to be Joe Flacco going against, yes, hashtag, oh God, Geno Smith. And I'll be home tomorrow, so you can bet if he plays like I think he's going to play, then I'll be using that hashtag and trying to get that going and get that trending. But anyway, the Ravens at 3-3, they are 1.5-point underdogs at Geno Smith and the 1-5 New York Jets.
Wait, so Geno Smith is giving points?
Mm-hmm.
What? No way.
Yeah, I know.
Baltimore, no problem. Ravens are going to handle their business. All you need to know is that Geno Smith is playing this game. You will probably see Ryan Fitzpatrick in this game because it's Geno Smith. And it won't matter. I'll take Baltimore. Easy win. I'm not quite locking it down, but there's a lot of potential locks this week. I will say that, but I'm not going to give it up on this one.
I hope Ryan Fitzpatrick doesn't come into this game. I hope Todd Bowles isn't that crazy of a coach to change his mind after a half a week or three quarters or whatever and go right back to Ryan Fitzpatrick. I'm rooting for Todd Bowles. I think he's a good coach, but as we discussed, putting in Geno Smith is basically the white flag. And my pick of the Jets being a playoff team is not going to happen, because you don't make the playoffs with Geno Smith as your quarterback. This is actually a battle of my two wild card picks from the AFC, Baltimore and the Jets. And I was going to have a really tough time with this pick before, oh God, Geno Smith. So yes, I'll take the Ravens. I think this will be a shutout. I'm having a hard time imagining Geno Smith getting enough offense gathered to cover any spread or to win a game by a point. Or I don't see him scoring any points. I think the Ravens are going to shut him out, because that's how bad I think he is. We both think he is. He can't play cornerback either, by the way. So whatever he might generate, he's not going to be able to stop Joe Flacco and the Ravens from doing what they want to do, even though they won't have Steve Smith. By the way, was Todd Bowles trolling Geno Smith? Because there was something that came out during the Jets game on prime time on Monday night, talking about Geno Smith having comments about basically saying, I will be fine not starting as long as the team's winning, but now that the team's not winning, I'm getting kind of antsy. And Todd Bowles was informed of this after the game, and his response, this is before Todd Bowles decided to make the switch to Geno Smith, his response was, if you do get your chance saying something like that, you'd better be great. And now here he is going to Geno Smith and making him the starter. That almost sounds like he's trying to set Geno up to get his ass kicked. Like he wants him to get in here and show what he's got, which is nothing. I think Todd Bowles knows what Geno Smith is. And I really honestly think this is his way of, okay, you want to talk like you're getting antsy and you think you're that much better? Here you go. Here's the Baltimore Ravens defense. Go get him, kid. Have at it. That should be funny to watch. The Miami Dolphins and the Buffalo Bills. Buffalo at 4-2. This is not one of the spreads where the worst team is favored at home. Buffalo on a huge roll, won their last four in a row. 2.5-point favorites down in South Florida at the Miami Dolphins.
Yeah, the Dolphins kind of jumped up and snuck one by on Pittsburgh. I had absolutely no reasons to support that, so I'm going to go back the other way here. That they, you know, they're going to be feeling all good about themselves. So, yeah, this would be in a tough divisional game, perfect time for the Bills to go down there and assert a little dominance over the Dolphins, because the Dolphins are really bad. I mean, let's just admit that the Dolphins are bad, and Buffalo, after that 0-2 start, has been playing extremely solid football without, and they're doing it all without Sammy Watkins. Go figure. Looks like LeSean McCoy is not going to go, at least that's what I'm seeing. But either way, Miami's pretty putrid, so I'm going to take the Bills here on the road.
They are pretty putrid. I said they were horrible last week, and they responded by blowing the doors off the Pittsburgh Steelers. So this is one of those things where I'm very afraid to go against Miami again right now, because after playing much, much worse than I thought they were the first few weeks of the season, they finally decide to rise up all at once and play much, much better than I think they are. So maybe there's a sort of a splitting of the difference going on there where they'll actually play a decent game all around against the Buffalo Bills. I'm going to take the Dolphins. I don't feel excellent about it, but I will go with Miami. They might have another monster game out of Jay Ajayi up their sleeve. Who knows? Shady, as you mentioned, is ouchy. He's got a hamstring injury. He's there. He took the plane to Miami, so he's going to probably try to play a little bit. But if he can't go full speed, there's going to be somebody named Mike Gillislee that's going to run the ball for Buffalo. I don't know anything about him. And kind of like on the same level of the Browns, how many guys can you lose before it starts really affecting you? Buffalo does not have Sammy Watkins, and they're not going to have Robert Woods tomorrow. And he's been the best receiver for them after Sammy Watkins. So it's another situation of, I don't know how Tyrod Taylor does anything. I don't know who he's going to throw to. So maybe he'll make a big star out of somebody else, but I don't see it happening. So I'm going to go with the Dolphins. By the way, I have another candidate for name of the year. I might have to decide between these guys. This one, this is another Pro Football Focus stat that I saw that made me smile, because they talked about Nickel Robey Olmon for the Bills will be matched up against Jarvis Landry, and that should be a good matchup. He's been a very good defensive back. Landry's been very good in the slot. What stood out about that is that Nickel Robey Coleman, that's not me describing the nickelback for the Bills and whose name happens to be Robey Coleman. That's his name. His first name is Nickel with two L's, and his last name is one of those hyphenated deals, Robey Coleman. That's kind of cool to me. I'm sorry that the nickelback for the Bills happens to be named Nickel. I mean, that I'm born to be a nickelback. My name is Nickel. So there you go. That's just one of those things that kind of made me smile. I still don't know if it's as cool as the offensive lineman from Philadelphia, but since he might be out of the league very soon because of how bad he is, maybe Nickel Robey Coleman will be my name of the year after all. Moving on to the Washington Redskins and the Detroit Lions. Washington, another team getting it together, running off four straight wins after two losses to start the year. They are one-point underdogs at the scrappy 3-3 Detroit Lions.
Yeah, the Lions have been hanging around. I mean, I got to give them credit for being 3-3. But Washington, just like Buffalo, they have been on a roll. They've been playing some pretty darn good football. So Kirk Cousins has sort of righted the ship. I like what they're doing. They're sort of using this running back by committee approach, but they're still making gains on the ground for the most part. So they're basically just kind of getting this, 2-3-headed monster going in the backfield. So I got to say, I'm going to have to give it to the Redskins here to go to 5-2. Try to keep pace with the Cowboys.
Yeah, I'm with you. That Skins rushing attack really made an impression on me last week. So here they come against the Lions, who are giving up 4.7 yards a carry. If the Redskins run for 200 yards as a team, don't be surprised tomorrow. So I'm going with Washington along with you. They're going to have trouble stopping Marvin Jones and Golden Tate. So it might be a bit of a shootout, but they're not going to get much help in the running game because Theo Riddick's out once again. So they're running DeAndre Washington and Zach Zinner. I don't see much success in that response. It also helps the Redskins running that Detroit does not have Haloti Ngata or DeAndre Levy tomorrow. It should be wide open for the Redskins to run the ball, I would think. So I will go with Redskins with you. This Cubs game is going to end before we go off the air, I think, because they're leading 5-0 in the ninth inning and Aroldis Chapman is on. So it should be a matter of time, I would think. Anyway, back to the picks. The Indianapolis Colts, 2-4. and looking very unimpressive themselves. They need to get their stuff together. They are 3-point underdogs, cop out line of 3 points at the scrappy 3-3 Tennessee Titans.
Yeah, and you know, the Colts, it's another team that's been letting a lot of people down, finding ways to lose games. And we were talking about, you know, who is going to come out of that AFC South. I mean, is it going to be the Titans? Is it going to be Houston? I mean, the Colts, we don't trust any of those teams. But I definitely don't trust Andrew Luck on the road here at Tennessee. So Tennessee, like you said, scrappy. And I think that'll be enough. And I think that Mariota will make enough of a headache for the Colts defense. Well, Colts defense is a bit of a interesting term. But, oh, wait. Oh, my God.
Yeah, breaking announcement in the middle of our picks. I can't believe I'm saying this sentence. The Chicago Cubs have just won the National League pennant.
I'm going to take the Titans as I try to compose myself here.
I'm as flustered as you are. I can't believe I just saw that. I'm going to take the Colts because throughout the years, going even back to Peyton Manning, whatever the Colts have been going through, whatever trials and tribulations they've had, the one thing they've always been able to do is go to Nashville and make bitches out of the Tennessee Titans. Now, this might be a different Titans team. They might be on the upswing and making themselves into a possible contender in the future. But I'm going to go with Indianapolis just because I think that's what they need right now, is they need the Tennessee Titans to be on the field so that they can get a victory. Although they better protect Andrew Luck or else they're going to lose again, because the Titans, the one thing they can do very well is come after your quarterback. They also better knock down a pass somewhere along the way, because Marcus Mariota can take advantage through the air, even though he's not where he wants to be right now as a quarterback. If you let his guys run deep down the field without covering him, he will exploit that. So by a small margin, I'll take the Colts to right the ship and beat the Titans. The Atlanta Falcons and the San Diego Chargers, this one should have an over-under of about 500 points. San Diego at 2-4, 5.5-point underdogs at the 4-2 Atlanta Falcons.
I would have expected this line to actually be larger. I was expecting this to be in that 7 or 8 point neighborhood. So I do expect the Chargers to hang around, but that Atlanta offense is just, you know, they made it through what we assumed would be that murderer's row of defensive teams with pretty much flying colors. And now they get the Chargers at home. Yeah, I'll take the Falcons to put up a hurting on them. Even if the Chargers score 34, they still probably won't cover this number.
This defense is indeed meat compared to Atlanta's last couple of games. But San Diego stays with everyone, as you just said. So I'm going to take the points and take the Chargers. I don't envision them beating the Falcons straight up, but wouldn't surprise me. Magically, through everything, Phillip Rivers and the Chargers stay with everybody and put up amazing amounts of yards and points somehow, some way. So I'm actually going to go with the Chargers and the 5.5 points. Tampa Bay at 2-3. I think they're coming off of their bye from last week. There they are. They're a 1-point underdog at Colin Kaepernick and the 1-5 San Francisco 49ers.
Yeah, I hate to say it, but I'm taking the 49ers here. Oh, my God. This might be the worst team in football, but Tampa Bay's not very good either, and they're a bit beat up. You know, Doug Martin hasn't played for them most of the year. Their running attack isn't very solid. I don't know. Jameis Winston, I'm sure, will be able to make some plays on offense, but every once in a while, maybe we get that San Francisco offense in a little bit of a rhythm. They're going to do it. If they're going to do it, it's going to be here at home against Tampa Bay. Begrudgingly, we'll take the 49ers.
I can't do it. Tampa Bay, first of all, they're going to run for 500 yards in this game, because San Francisco, as I pointed out, by the numbers and by the eye test, can't stop anybody from running the football. That's got to be the lightest defensive line in football. They get pushed around so easily. So Tampa's going to come in with no muscle hamster. They're going to run more Jacquizz Rodgers out of the backfield, and he's going to go off for 150 again. it's going to be ugly. So I have to take Tampa Bay. San Francisco doesn't have Carlos Hyde running for them on the other side. They're going to run some people named Mike Davis and Sean Drone. And it's more important for San Francisco to rely on their running game with Colin Kaepernick as quarterback, because his accuracy, not that Blaine Gabbert's accuracy was any good, but Collins might be worse. So they really need some help out of the run game. He's probably the best running back they have, Colin Kaepernick. So it's going to be something where he has to do double duty again, be the best runner and the best passer. And I don't see it. I know the Buccaneers have not been impressive so far this year, but I think they got enough going for them where they're going to win this game and beat the 49ers pretty easily. That leaves one game with your lock of the week still not revealed, so this one's pretty easy to figure out. New England with Tom Brady and Pittsburgh without Ben Roethlisberger. You can guess what the line might be, and you can guess what Jason's lock of the week might be. New England at 5-1 are 7.5-point favorites at Landry Jones? Almost called him Jarvis Jones. Or Jarvis Landry, at Landry Jones and the 4-2 Pittsburgh Steelers.
Ding, 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 ding. how could this not be the lock of the week? This is Landry Jones starting against Tom Brady on his, you know, fuck you NFL tour now, part two. I mean, how many of these tours is he going to go on now? It seems like an every year thing. No, New England is just going to completely annihilate Pittsburgh. This is not even going to be close. Landry Jones is not Ben Roethlisberger. I don't care how many weapons that team has. New England is going to go in there, beat the living daylights out of Pittsburgh, lock it down, easy.
Yeah, no matter what happens on one side of the ball, when both teams go to the air, you're going to ask Landry Jones to keep up with Tom Brady. No, that's not going to happen. So, yeah, I'm with you. I have the Patriots giving the 7.5. The Steelers' defense had been playing even better than I thought coming into the year, but they keep losing very key pieces. Ryan Shazier is their best tackler. He hasn't been there in a few weeks. He's not going to be there again. And one of their best playmakers left over after Shazier was the defensive end, Cameron Hayward, who stands about 8 feet tall and knocks down every pass out there. He's not going to play either in this game. So this is Tom Brady basically having a free pass and getting all the time he wants to stand back there and pick apart the Steelers' defense. So this should be, I agree with you, it should be an easy win for the Patriots. They should cover easily. Steelers are 3-0 at home, so maybe it's not as easy as either one of us think, but and I didn't lock it down, so that shows that I have a little bit of trepidation as well. But I can't see the Steelers keeping up with the Patriots, so I will agree with you on that one. For the first time ever, we have a good amount of time after we made all our picks on the live portion of the show, so maybe it's fitting that we have all that time. Because now you can talk about a little bit on the live portion for all the live listeners, all two of them, about what is going on in your head and in your house right now as you've watched the Chicago Cubs actually clinch a National League pennant for the first time since 1945. How in the world does that feel?
I don't think it's actually settled in. I think doing the show tonight and sort of having to have my attention divided here tonight is sort of kind of like kept me a little more grounded. But yeah, I get to actually wake up tomorrow morning and know that the Cubs are going to be playing on Tuesday in Cleveland. And it's just, it's unbelievable. Until that last out, and this is part of why it was so hard to celebrate and get so excited, because until that last out, you're just waiting for it to go bad. You know, something's going to happen. Someone's going to, you know, drop a ball or something. There's going to be something crazy that happens. And, you know, you can't say enough about this team. I mean, you know, I was telling you a little bit right before we went on air that I had a feeling that they would get to Kershaw today, and they put up 5 on him, and even at that point, I'm like, oh, this isn't over. I don't think anybody expected Kyle Hendricks. I
mean, this wasn't over. They weren't putting any wood on Kyle Hendricks, and they're up 5-0 on Kershaw, and you were thinking it wasn't over.
Well, I'm a Cubs fan.
Oh, You Cubs fans, I tell you.
We're gonna see something that people haven't seen in lifetime. You know, it's not too many. I don't know if is there anybody still around from. And there's probably a handful, you know, 5 or 6 people that are around from the last time the Cubs were there when they won. You know, and a little bit larger handful of people that were there the last time they actually went to the World Series.
Right.
But no, I mean, this is, you know, I'm just thinking of all the memories, just, you know, growing up, 84, 89, you know, 03, just all the heartache. And, wow. Like I said, it still hasn't completely settled in yet. It's like I'm living in a dream.
Yeah. I'm with you in that respect. It doesn't feel real. Like, this feels like a video game, like the MLB The Show, watching the Cubs jumping around celebrating a pennant, because you don't see it in real life. But this is real life. This actually happened. So,
I was going to say, this is sort of the culmination of all the last few years on this podcast, all the talk that we've done about the Cubs and their rebuilding, and, you know, and they'll be fine, and, you know, they got to blow it up before things start to get better, and Theo Epstein's got a plan. And, you know, I definitely gave the impression that I had a lot of trust in what he was doing, because you could see some vision for this team, and it hasn't been there for, you know, all of our lives. And then you just kept watching the acquisitions. You kept watching them stocking up that farm system. And, yeah, let's bring on Cleveland. Can we play tomorrow?
No, you need a day or two to absorb it and let it soak in. You know, the Indians and the Cubs in a World Series, that's about as unreal as it can get right there. It's about two teams that haven't brought home a championship in the longest. That's almost a perfect matchup in one respect.
Yeah. They're both teams are going to be lined up with their rotations, so it's going to be, you know, it's going to be extremely interesting. I would not be surprised if they throw Lester in game one, and then they save Hendricks for game three, because they love him pitching at home. So I'd be interested to see who the Cubs throw in game two, whether they throw Arrieta in game two on the road, or whether they just decide to throw Lackey in game two. But I would be surprised if it's Hendricks in game two on the road, because I think Madden wants him to pitch at home.
Yeah, he's been so great at home. I wouldn't be surprised if he did that as well. And I saw a rumor today that you may have seen, that they've got Kyle Schwarber down in the Arizona Fall League working out and getting ready, and he might be able to DH in the World Series to bring it all full circle.
That would be amazing. When I saw that little blurb come across today that Schwarber is going to be taking some at-bats in the AFL, and with the intention that he may be able to DH, would be just absolutely stunning to add that bat to the lineup if he's not too rusty, you know, but I'm sure he's been taking swings. It won't be the first swings he's taken, but to add that threat, a lefty bat like that, I mean, that will just be insane. And then to also have him for pinch hitting in Chicago, you can't ask. That's like Christmas coming early if he's able to go.
Yeah, get the whole squad back together. Make sure that nobody has felt like they're being left out for this whole thing. That would be kind of fairy tale like. So we'll see if that comes about. That actually leads to a really small thing that I had that I'll do on the after show, which might last about 5 or 10 minutes, knowing how sick we both are, which comes back to sources, people. You got to figure out your sources and who to trust. I had a little something that happened this week with somebody at my bowling alley that you gotta figure out who's saying what and where things are coming from. You can't just trust any old person as far as sources go. So as we go off the air live, on the field, and they're giving away the trophy for the National League pennant to the Chicago Cubs. Who could have thought it? More on our after show when we come back. into our VIP after show program, which, like I said, might not last very long because we're both kind of under the weather here, but we'll do what we can. Do you have anything else that you wanted to add?
Actually, no. I've been my main goal here is to get into enjoying this this post game show.
Yeah, with the Cubbies, I understand that. Right.
So, but while you're talking, I actually just mute myself and put the volume back on my TV. So I'm catching like every third word you say here for about the last 20 minutes. So I apologize for being distracted tonight.
Hey, we certainly understand. No doubt about that. I counted up, I think, 7 that we disagree on tomorrow, which was surprising because we started out so lockstep with everything, but winds up being 7, not counting the Thursday game. So should be a fun week. Like you said, a lot of games where you think you know exactly what's going to happen. It should be no doubt about it, a bunch of potential locks, but we've been doing this for so many years, we know that a lot of times those weeks where it feels like that, it doesn't quite work out that way. So we'll see how it turns out tomorrow. My only little thing, my little story that I wanted to tell. So I'm at the bowling alley Wednesday night in my bowling league. My female teammate Bobby has a grandson. He's either in junior high or high school, young kid, nice guy. He comes in, takes out his phone, and he knows that I'm a football fan. I don't think he knows that I do the football show. But he starts popping all over the place at something on his phone, and he can't wait to show it to me as I sit down after I made one of my throws. So I sit down, okay, what is it? And he shows it to me, and he's like, This is the thing right here. This makes all the sense in the world because the Cowboys, they got their guy. They got their quarterback. They don't need Romo anymore. This makes all the sense in the world. And what he's pointing to is a story that he hasn't even opened up the whole story, but it's just a headline. And the headline read something like Cowboys preparing to trade Tony Romo to the Denver Broncos. And so the first thing I do is check below to see what the name of the website is. And I don't remember what the name of the website was. I'd never heard of it in my life. And I immediately try to start explaining to this young kid, you can't really trust everything you read. You have to have real sources, or you have to have sources that you trust before you start trying to go around talking about something that you saw online. And he's not listening to me even a little bit. He just starts talking to somebody else that was sitting nearby. Man, this trade right here, this makes perfect sense. The Cowboys, the Broncos need a quarterback, and the Cowboys don't need Tony Romo no more. They got Dak Prescott, man. He playing, he balling out. He best rookie quarterback in the league, man. That's all they need. And so I'm, meanwhile, while he's doing that, I'm going onto my phone and going to the sources that I trust, that I know about. And I see nothing about that rumor on any of the sources that I check. And this is Wednesday night. This is now Saturday night, 3 days later. I still haven't seen anything about that particular rumor. Some site made this up. They were speculating that this might make sense because the Broncos need a quarterback. Although they don't really need a quarterback, they drafted a quarterback in the first round. So it's almost counterproductive to then trade for a veteran. But it was a nice rumor. It kind of makes sense if you don't really think too hard about it, but it falls apart when you think about how much Jerry Jones is in love with Tony Romo. He's been indicating every time he gets a chance to open his mouth that Tony Romo still has the job when he comes back. And since Jerry Jones is the coach of the team as well as the general manager and the owner, if Jerry says it, then that means it's true. So no, Tony Romo's not getting traded. Tony Romo is a Cowboy for life. Jerry Jones obviously lives his life through Tony Romo. He probably would have been there in the room while Tony Romo was fucking Carrie Underwood and all the other starlets that he had before he got married. Jerry loves Tony Romo. He's not giving Tony Romo away in a trade for anybody. And you just got to trust your sources. The internet is still relatively young. We're so old, we remember the days when there was no internet. You didn't have a chance to have rumors like this out there you didn't have a chance to have them taken seriously, because to get through all the different measures in order to get into one of the media sources that we had, such as a TV show or a newspaper or a talk show or on the radio or something like that, there's so many filters it would have had to go through before it even made it there. Now with the internet, it can make it to your phone or your computer, and you don't even have to be looking for it. It can be some idiot that bought the advertising on whatever website you're checking. You know, if you're on your Yahoo Mail or something, somebody bought the advertising, they can put up this thing that's basically an ad. It's not a story, but they make it look like an actual news story, where it's just an advertisement for whatever stupid site that they have. There's so many ways for false news to get into the bloodstream. You really have to be careful in checking your sources. This could break off into a political rant as well, because I can't believe the number of political things that have been spread around out there on social media that aren't anywhere near true. And one visit to Snopes.com would show you that, you know, this is not true. Here's the actual facts behind it. This is why this is not true. This is the actual real truth. But that's just my little story. That you got to be careful about that. You're going to have a bunch of kids running around talking about, I saw Rihanna and Beyonce are lesbians and they're sleeping with each other. I saw it on this website. No, you can't believe everything you see, and you just got to be careful with your sources. So that's my little lesson for tonight.
I hate to say it, but I paid zero attention to everything you just said.
I didn't think you paid any attention. I'm not surprised by that at all.
So yeah, I'm gonna go, and we can end this early because I want to enjoy this.
That Tuesday night for our recap show.
During game one of the World Series, why not?
Why not? What the hell? All right, that'll do it. He is Jay. I am Dre. This is In Much Less Detail, the podcast. We are out of here. Jason's been gone mentally for a long time, so now he's physically leaving. Thank you all for listening. I still can't believe I'm looking at this on my TV. Cubs win the pennant. Cubs are going to the World Series. I got to do it again. I got to play 1984 again. Cubs win! Cubs win! Cubs in a World Series! Holy cow! I think Harry Carey would literally have a heart attack if he were broadcasting that game. We are out of here. We'll see you Tuesday night for the recap of Week 7. Enjoy your football tomorrow.